Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Senior Director of Billboard Charts.
And I'm Katie Atkinson, Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
I'm doing great, Keith. Something about that day after a long weekend. You feel a little more rested, you know?
Yes, yes. And also slightly more rushed.
Yeah, there's that, too. It's already Tuesday somehow.
Yeah, somehow. I don't know how. But as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got chart news on how Olivia Rodrigo debuts at number one on the Billboard 200 chart with her debut album, Sour, and with the biggest week of the year. Plus, how BTS's Butter bows atop the Billboard Hot 100, securing the group their fourth number one.
And we have an interview with super producer and songwriter Watt. The recent Grammy Award winner for Producer of the Year has worked with a who's who of chart toppers, including Dua Lipa, Miley Cyrus, Post Malone, and Justin Bieber, including on his most recent Hot 100 number one, Peaches. So stay tuned for that in just a moment. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
Okay, let's do the chart chat. First up, Olivia Rodrigo's debut album, Sour, captures a sweet week.
Oh, I've been using that pun for the last week and a half.
I know. I'm sure everyone is very tired of it. Captures a sweet week as it debuts at number one on the Billboard 200 chart with 295,000 equivalent album units earned in the U.S. in the week ending May 27th, according to MRC data. Wow, Katie is holding up a box of Olivia Rodrigo Sour Patch. Is there an album inside there?
No, it's literally just Sour Patch Kids.
Wow.
I haven't opened it yet.
Wow. Was that just at the grocery store?
No, they actually did. She did pop-ups in, I think, New York and L.A. In L.A., she did like a car wash. Did you see pictures from that?
No.
She took over a car wash.
Were they handing out albums?
No, they were not, Keith. Okay. They were, I think, doing the Sour Patch Kids, and they changed the signage of the car wash to like Sour. The like Sour car wash. Super cute. And Olivia went there even.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, with that 295,000 units, it actually surpasses the year's previous biggest week when Taylor Swift's Fearless debuted at number one with 291,000 units on the April 24th chart. So if I didn't actually impress that upon you yet, Olivia Rodrigo has the biggest week of the year for an album with Sour. Sour also nabs the largest week for an act's debut charting album on the Billboard 200 since the chart transitioned from an album sales only ranking to a units based fancy consumption chart back in December of 2014. It actually beats Cardi B's debut set and first Billboard 200 entry, Invasion of Privacy, which opened at number one on the April 21st, 2018 chart with 255,000 units. So the Cardi reference is specifically talking about, oh, okay, Sour has the biggest week for an act's debut charting album, and the one that she beat was Cardi's album.
Yeah.
And technicality here, just want to point out in case anyone is like a big Cardi fan wondering, wait, didn't she have mixtapes? She sure did. She had mixtapes before that album, but none of them charted on the Billboard 200.
And yes, debut album, yes.
It's very tricky because who's has a debut album? Is it a studio album, a mixtape? It's very tricky these days.
This is part of Keith's job, guys.
It's an album that's on the chart. If it's on the chart, it's an album. That's where it ends. Of Sour's 295,000 units, streaming equivalent units actually comprise 218,000 of that number. And that equals 300.73 million on-demand streams of the album's 11 tracks. So 11 tracks, over 300 million on-demand streams in its first week.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the second biggest streaming week for a non-R&B hip-hop album. So all the other bigger streaming weeks were basically by a rap album. And the second biggest streaming week for an album by a woman of any genre. And the only album that was both, you know, basically the only non-hip-hop album and the only album by a woman that had more streams in a single week was Ariana Grande's Thank You Next, with 307 million streams back in 2019. And she had 12 songs on her album, I think. So, yeah, Olivia, she's huge.
Clearly huge. I mean, I listened to the album multiple times, and not just for work, but because I listened to it and then wanted to listen to it multiple more times because it's a great album.
Do you think the brevity of it was helpful to you?
Yeah, I mean, it reminded me of like a lot of albums I loved growing up. Like Weezer albums would be like 30 minutes, and you would really just fall in love with these like short songs and get connected to them so much quicker because you're only consuming, you know, 10 at a time.
I noted in my story on Sunday how having a number one album with only 11 songs is pretty rare. In a world now where everything is so streaming focused, mm-hmm. a lot of albums pile on the number of tracks in order to possibly enhance their streaming numbers. Because the more tracks you have, the more streams you can get, the bigger number you can have, yada, yada. But, you know, sometimes less is more. And Olivia has proved that in the past 12 months, in fact, only one album that has been number one had fewer number of tracks, and that was BTS's B, which only had 8 tracks.
There's a lot of ways I feel like that Olivia feels like an old school artist, but also very current at the same time. It's a very hard line to toe. And she I saw our coworker Andrew Unterberger made a comparison of her to Alanis Morissette and Jagged Little Pill. And I was like, that's a good comparison, which is great. I mean, very high praise, obviously, for this album. But then also the fact that she had this crazy streaming number, obviously she's connecting with young people and people who stream. And it's not, you know, it's just wild how she's managed to just cross all these, you know, boundaries.
Also interesting, Alanis Morissette had a very, very like teen pop career in Canada before she became Jagged Little Pill Alanis Morissette.
So it's like the Disney career of Olivia versus the you can't do this on television career of Alanis.
I think there's some definite, you know, alt rock touches and flourishes to Sour. And she has worked with some personnel on that album that, you know, comes from that world. Not entirely unlike, say, You Ought to Know from Alanis, you know, where she was working with Chili Peppers. There was John Frusciante, I think, was on it.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that.
And Chad Smith, maybe, from the Chili Peppers?
Well, that makes sense, but I didn't even know that. That's wild.
I'm going to quickly double check that.
Okay. Yeah, the first track on Sour, it's called Brutal. It's just like, touched my like 90s, you know, riot girl heart. Like, it's just so perfectly, you know, Olivia would definitely be playing Lilith Fair if it still existed.
And I was actually wrong on both counts.
Okay.
I was correct with the Chili Peppers. It was Dave Navarro and Flea.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's hilarious that you chose two separate Chili Peppers.
Basically, I'm like, I'm naming everyone except Anthony Kiedis, basically.
Right, exactly.
All right, well, moving on, in other chart news, over on the Hot 100, BTS bounds in at number one with Butter, garnering the South Korean pop group its fourth number one. And all of them have come in the last 9 months. That's pretty incredible. Butter drew 32.2 million U.S. streams and 243,000 downloads sold in the week ending May 27th. It also attracted 18.1 million radio airplay audience impressions in the week ending May 30th.
But hey, can we talk about Olivia Rodrigo some more?
Well, yes.
I'm just joking.
It's funny. It's like you're reading the script almost. Also, speaking of Rodrigo, she actually has 3 songs in the top 10 on the Hot 100 this week as her former number one, Good For You, falls to number 2 in its second week, while Deja Vu hits a new high at number 3, and a new album track called Traitor debuts at number 9. And with those 3 concurrent hits, Rodrigo is the first artist to chart 3 songs in the top 10 at the same time, all from a debut album.
Man. And also, from reading Gary's article, you see just how big Butter was because Good For You, which was number 1 last week, went up in like every metric. And yet Butter still is number 1. That shows you just how massive Butter is. So.
Yeah, we'll see who's number 1 next week.
For You could come right back. Who knows? And now, it's time for our interview with Watt. The songwriter, producer, multi-instrumentalist, and singer has worked with a who's who of artists in recent years, helping craft some of your favorite hits, even if you don't know it. Among his hit list, Dua Lipa's Break My Heart, Camila Cabello and Shawn Mendes's Senorita, 5 Seconds of Summer's Youngblood, Justin Bieber's Peaches featuring Daniel Caesar and Giveon, along with the bulk of Miley Cyrus's latest album, Plastic Hearts, and the entirety of Ozzy Osbourne's last album, Ordinary Man.
Recently, he won the Grammy Award for Producer of the Year, and he's been steadily working towards releasing his own solo album, which is sure to be filled with a starry lineup of collaborators. In our chat, we got the story on Peaches, a track he co-wrote, and how it came together, how Miley Cyrus's Midnight Sky, a track he co-wrote and co-produced, found its way to Stevie Nicks, and how his guitar solo on Post Malone's Take What You Want, featuring Ozzy Osbourne and Travis Scott, came to be.
And we even ask if he might be involved on Post Malone's next album or albums. You'll have to listen and find out. So take a listen to our chat with Watt now.
I got my peaches out in Georgia.
Oh yeah, shit.
I get my weed from California.
That's that shit.
I took my chick up to the north, yeah.
Hello to Watt and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop podcast.
Hey guys.
So first off, belated congratulations on winning the Grammy for Producer of the Year. I was actually in that virtual press room after you won, and you talked about how much it meant to you given how tough 2020 was. So just having some hindsight, you know, what do you think that honor means to you now that you've had a few months to process?
I mean, it's just really crazy. It came in the mail actually a couple of days ago.
Do you have it?
Yeah. I was with a couple of friends. And it just immediately, the tequila came out and we all took shots out of it. And it was really awesome and really cool. It's such an honor and an amazing thing. It's not something that really feels like a real, you know. I've just kind of kept on making music like I always have.
I've wondered, you know, when I've seen people actually take shots out of the Grammy, is it actually watertight? It won't actually drip out the bottom?
No, it actually feels as I was doing it, it feels like one of those things a bartender uses to like, you know, measure out your drinks. And you're always like, come on, motherfucker, give me a little bit more than that. You know, when you see the guy take it out, the Grammy thing just reminds you exactly like the perfect amount of a big drink.
Well, you are a big shot. So there you go. Well, you know, the award recognized your production work on songs with a whole bunch of artists that sort of go across all genres, including Dua Lipa's Break My Heart, Miley Cyrus's Midnight Sky, Posty's Take What You Want, featuring Ozzy and Travis. For you, when you collaborate, when you write or produce with someone, just you and another person, is there some secret or magic recipe that makes that kind of process work for you?
No, absolutely not. It's actually quite the opposite, which is what makes my job so much fun and why you can list off all those different types of artists with all songs that sound so different, because it's always different. I was just having this conversation the other day, you know, every part of making music is different, just like a different artist paint in different fashions. Jackson Pollock throws it at the canvas and, you know, Basquiat did what he did and Warhol screen printed it. You know, it's like everyone does it differently. I was working with someone who was doing melody and lyrics recently, and I just having this conversation with them, an artist, about how, you know, for me, it's melody. First I come up with some chords and then I hear a melody. So immediately where my head goes. But other artists, and this one in specific that I was working with, writes all the lyrics first, pages and pages and pages of lyrics, like this free flowing amazing thing where you just see them like just boom boom boom, like it's like they're making a piece of art, you know, just flowing words, and they really pay attention to like the proper way to write poetry. Get on the mic with all of those words in front of them and they just start trying different melodies because they're very good with melody. They know they're very good with melody, but they need the words inspire the melody. As the opposite of the way I make music. So someone like that and me together, we make it so different that it's going to come together and do something really cool. So I love getting with people that do things in all different ways, because it makes the end result just be a different thing every time. You know, there's no one way to do it. Mm. But I would say a willingness to collaborate is important. Some, you know, if someone wants to come in and do everything themselves, and they can do that anywhere, you know, we're there together to work off of each other. So as long as someone's in to hear, you know, hear ideas, and I can hear theirs and everything, then it usually works pretty good.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of your, you know, longest and most high profile working relationships has been with Post Malone, who we mentioned. And his manager teased the other day that a new album or albums, plural, could be on the way. Is that something that you've been maybe in the mix on at all this time around?
Not confirm or deny.
Okay, we'll come back to you.
When, the album's dropping Friday, everybody.
Right. And you recently had your third number one song on the Billboard Hot 100 as a songwriter with Justin Bieber's Peaches featuring Daniel Caesar and Giveon. So first of all, that is just an amazing song and a great look for Justin, I think. And how did that song begin, and how did it end up with all three of those artists involved like that? Do you know?
Well, you know, Justin is an artist that is, he's a perfect example. And I'm so happy you brought him up because, oh my God, he is so willing to listen to ideas, and until the thing is found and he makes it his own. And then once he knows he's got something, he runs with that ball and he spikes it in the end zone every single time. You know, no one sings a song like him. And so getting Daniel Caesar and Giveon on that song was all him. You know, that was him and reaching out to them to do it. That's not like, hey, manager, can you do this? It's him. Do you know what I mean? Like, he goes and makes it all happen. But that was a really fun song to do, actually, because Justin and I, you know, live close together. And he just, you know, we were kind of deep into the album at this point, and he just wanted to come over one day to jam with me. Really light and easy. And it was me and my engineer, and he came over, and the way my studio is kind of set up, everything's on. Took a long time to make that happen, but the drums are up at all times, all the keyboards are on, the guitar is one cable away from plugging in, the bass is one cable from plugging in away, vocal mic's always hot. I mean, it's just everything's on, so anything strikes you, you can sit down and do it. So you know, Justin, I had fun with Justin, like, in that setting, because he's such an amazing musician, and people forget about that because of, he's so great at everything. And he's also such a larger than life figure that you forget. Like, I'll never forget another moment. Years ago, we were making this record with Rick Rubin that never came out, and I was just playing guitar on the session. But I was walking through the house, I was going to the bathroom or something, and I just heard the most beautiful piano playing coming. And I was like, wow, so whoever's here is here to come and play with us. This is going to be amazing. Who is? I was just like inspired. I walk up and it's Justin. I never played piano before, and he was playing like the most beautiful, soulful chords with, you know, counter melodies and moving bass. And just like, you don't learn that. You're born with that. So, you know, I wanted him to just bounce around the studio and see what it's like to, like, have fun, put down a beat. Justin, go play the drums, play the drums. Made up this awesome thing that we looped up, sat down at the piano, start playing these chords, and looped those as well. And that was amazing. I put down some bass, I put down some guitar in the time, and then the mic was up and he just started freestyling. He just, the whole thing was all him.
Wow.
All, put down the drum pocket, put down the chords, then freestyled the thing. And it was just this thing that was written in like 30 minutes, you know, really effortlessly. And I just kept choosing the bits that I, you know, liked as he was doing it. And then just the thing just flew, and we were just talking words back and forth for fun. And then, you know, he asked me to send it to him so he could work on it more himself, because he was really into it. And then before I knew it, it had a whole production that Harv did, which is so incredible and live sounding and fresh sound for pop music, I think. And he had put Gibeon and Daniel Caesar on the song, which just elevated it in such a way. So, you know, the initial thing of getting it out of him and giving him the space to create him, that was really my role there. You know, just, okay, it's cool, do this. Okay, now let's move here, let's move that. And then once he had something rolling, he just took it and ran with it. And I think that song's really special to him because he knows he wrote that shit. You know, that was all from him, from inception to finish line. And it's really great. I'm so happy to be involved in that. And that initial creation of that song will be one of my, probably my favorite memories with Justin ever. When we've known each other for like 10 years.
You know, a lot of people heard that song for the first time on his Tiny Desk concert, which is awesome because he's on the piano. Like you said, a lot of people might not have ever seen him that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've spoken a lot about a potential solo album for yourself. Is that something that's nearing the finish line? Are you focusing on that?
You know, it's something that I'm really taking my time with. And it's constantly developing as time goes by.
Have you regretted ever mentioning it because everyone keeps asking you about it now?
I love talking about it because it keeps getting better and better, or I shouldn't say the word better and better, but like more developed and more people are getting involved. And it's just like this thing that I'm trying to keep like close because I wanted to, you know, have, you know, kind of put it, announce it at once. But as time moves on and I keep working with more and more people, it's all working itself into making sense together. But what I can say is it's definitely an album of collaborations, which, you, as you know, and we talked about already, it's something I love to do. I love to make moments between artists either that really belong together and it's really special, or that are from totally different worlds, but for whatever reason it works. So the concept for the album kind of lies within that.
And you know, we know that what a great guitarist you are. So when you're songwriting, is it kind of a mixture of like, are you starting always with a guitar line or do you start other places? Like, how does that work?
I really like starting with bass a lot as well, because with a bass, there's no chords. So it allows you, when you're writing melody, which I said, you know, it's like the original riff or chords for me first, then melody. There's no major or minor because you're not, you know, the bass line will suggest should it be major chords or minor chords. But when writing a melody to just the bass line, you're not stuck there because it's just root notes. So it's a really, you know, I feel like you have more freedom with a great bass line and then a vocal. And then the melody can dictate what the chord should be after that.
You know, I saw you laugh when I said what a great guitarist you are, but I feel like Keith needs to tell you when he first heard that Posty song.
Just stop. So when I heard the Post album for the first time, and it's great, and I get to take what you want, and I sort of lose my shit, because I'm like, okay, Ozzy, Posty, Travis. I'm like, who's the guitarist? Who's playing the guitar? Like, it's what? What the fuck? Why doesn't he have like a featured artist credit or something? Like, wait. I just sort of, I mean, I literally played the song like 30 times, like in a row, like in a stretch, because I just loved it so much. So yes, great moment on that song. That wasn't really a question. It was just me being enthusiastic. That's all.
Thank you so much, Keith. I mean, that probably, you know, it's one of my favorite moments ever. I'll never forget driving down Sunset Boulevard and Kiss FM comes on in LA and they're playing fucking Take What You Want. And there's a tapping guitar solo. I'm like passing the whiskey and I'm like, there's a fucking tapping guitar solo on pop radio. Eat shit. You know, it's like, so it was so funny to me and great and awesome. And that comes like, again, you know, that's Posty being like, do a guitar solo, like it's an Ozzy song, like let's make this a real Ozzy song. Coming from a fan perspective, like every Ozzy song has a great guitar solo, right? Like classic, whether it's Randy Rhoads or Zakk Wylde or the stuff with Sabbath or Jakey Lee later, you know, like they're just, you want to hear the solos. So, you know, it was Post's encouragement. And then the thing happens with Pressure, where hey, you're doing a solo on an Aussie song, so step it the fuck up, you know? And I like pressure. I like being fucking made to perform, gotta perform right now, you know? And so it was so much fun. I think Chad was over while I was doing the solo, and he's always like the best cheerleader, because it's like, if it's good enough for Chad, then maybe it's good enough for everyone else. That's how I always think in terms of the guitar parts.
Katie, I mean, I realize like we could sit here and geek out for a while, but I want to truthfully say that like Katie and I have said, like, there are so many of your songs in the past few years where we're just like, man, this is so amazing. Like the Miley record, like Five Sauce, like it's just sort of insane, kind of the breadth of the production. And this is where I was going to say something about Stevie Nicks, but that will all just fall into a rabbit hole and we probably shouldn't right now.
No, you can, man. It's all good. Talk to me.
Did you actually get to interact with Stevie in any capacity, or was it all like through email or something?
I did. It was really, really great. We were working on the song,
we're speaking of Midnight Sky, obviously, the remixed version, just so everyone knows. Yeah.
Yeah. When we were doing the song, and the song has its obvious nod to Edge of 17, Miley reached out to Stevie, being, you know, she's so respectful of art and creators and of lineage of music, reached out to her to show her the song and be like, hey, you know, this has a little nod to you. I hope this is cool. And Stevie, in Stevie fashion, which now I know because I got to talk to her a little bit, was so receptive and so cool, and was like, I don't even hear the similarity besides that guitar rhythm. I love the song. It's so great. So it was kind of like the natural progression between that and her doing the remix. And then, you know, we were working on it and talking to her kind of over the phone, because it was in COVID, and her assistant actually recorded her vocals in her apartment, and we were kind of sending them back and forth and doing notes together. And she stays up real late, real late. So, you know, I would get this call from an unknown number after she would hear the next bounce. And I just remember kind of falling asleep in my bed one night talking to Stevie Nicks we just got into a whole conversation about the world. And then it was like kind of one of those things where I was like kind of dozing off into like an amazing dream, but Stevie was talking to me, hello. And I was like, still kind of there. But it felt like a dream, and it was a dream. And we had to work through the wee hours of the night to kind of get it done in time for when they all wanted it to come out. But another situation where it's like, is this fucking real? Like, you know, Steve, you know, that song is one of the greatest recordings ever. And then I got to get the multi-tracks and fucking listen to them in the studio playing, and listen to those drums by themselves, and listen to that amazing Wadi Watel guitar by itself, and sit with it. And like, it was what inspired me to make the other songs. So it was just really kind of surreal and amazing. And those kinds of things, you know, you just do for the love of music. And it's like one of the perks of doing this amazing job is that you get to connect with, you know, people that have touched you and are the reason why you're here. And it's never lost on me. And I'm so grateful for the opportunity to get to do that. You know,
I love the fact that Watt can like, is a student of liner notes and knows all the guitarists and players on all these incredible records.
My dad had a huge crate of vinyls as a kid, and I sat in my basement and I went through every single one and read every single thing. And who's playing those horns on this? Oh, it's Maceo Parker. And who's like learning all those guys, you know, and just like, those guys are the shit. And that's what I became. You know, I was a studio musician. I was playing on other people's records and stuff like that. And like you said, who's the guitar player on the Post Malone song? Like this, just some, you know, you hear something that touches you, you need to be able to flip over a record and says it, boom, right there. A student of liner notes, the best way I've ever heard it put. That is, that's my thing.
Katie, I'll let you take it away from here and do what you want. take what you want.
What I'd like to do is say thank you so much, Watt, for talking to us today. We really appreciate it and can't wait to hear more music from you.
Yeah, coming soon. We're working up a storm right now. I had to just, you know, kind of run outside because I could realize that through my basement, you might be able to hear something I was working on, and that wouldn't.
No, we didn't hear
anything.
Thankfully,
we couldn't.
It's probably just Stevie Nicks recording her next album with you.
No.
Well, can't we just make that happen? Let's just wish into the universe. Maybe it'll happen.
That would be so cool.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you guys. I had a blast.
Thank you.
All right. Be good.
Bye. Thanks. Thank you again to Watt for taking the time. I have the feeling that this man has just fascinating stories for days. Like, I want more of the Stevie Nicks late night talks. I want it all. It's a great guy to talk to.
What I want to know is, in our interview at one point, we were watching him on Zoom, by the way, and it was visible at one point he left his house.
Yeah.
And went outside. And he did acknowledge that in our interview where he said, oh, I had to go outside because I wasn't sure if you could hear what we were working on.
We could have, but we didn't.
we didn't. But I wonder, I wonder who is he working with right now? Like, who is knocking on Watt's door?
At any given moment, I'm sure it's somebody that you recognize, basically.
I mean, I'm crossing my fingers. What if Stevie Nicks is doing something with him? I don't know.
Who knows?
More Dua Lipa? A new Dua project?
Yeah, new Dua. Hopefully.
Madonna? Come on. Hey! all right. Well, now it's time for the chart stat of the week.
If I close my eyes forever.
This week in 1989, Ozzy Osbourne, hey, look at him, was enjoying his first top 10 hit on the Hot 100. His duet with Lita Ford, Close My Eyes Forever, reached the top 10 on May 27th, 1989, and eventually peaked at number 8 on the June 17th chart. While Ozzy had enjoyed top 10 hits on the Billboard 200 albums chart and on the mainstream rock airplay chart, a top 10 hit on the Hot 100, our de facto pop singles chart, eluded the rocker until his power ballad, Teaming with Ford, in 1989. The track was also the first top 10 for Ford. Ozzy has visited the Hot 100's top 10 just once more, in 2019 via his featured role on Post Malone's Take What You Want alongside Travis Scott, which also peaked at number 8. So there you have it. This week in 1989, Ozzy Osbourne had his first top 10 on the Hot 100 with Close My Eyes Forever. I close my eyes forever. Do you know that song, Katie?
I don't. I was just going to say I don't know that song.
I didn't realize this until today when I was Googling and researching. Lita Ford, at the time, was managed by Sharon Osbourne, Ozzy's wife.
Did not know that.
So that's how that came together.
Can draw a direct line there.
Okay, so what song should we go out on, Katie?
Oh, man. I mean, we could do another Watt song.
Yeah, I mean, golly. What?
It really... I mean, I love all of Plastic Hearts. We could definitely do something
Prisoner.
Off that. Oh, yeah. I could pull in the Dua and the Miley all together.
It's like peanut butter and chocolate.
Ah, together. Exactly.
All right. We'll go on Prisoner, and we'll see you guys next time.
All right. Bye. Prisoner, prisoner, locked.